Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery, code Wondery.
Life is full of personal wins, whether it's cleaning your house, getting that dream car, or checking off your to-do list. Winning at life is a great feeling. And with the State Farm Personal Price Plan, you can keep winning when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling home and auto. So give yourself a round of applause. Talk to a State Farm agent today to learn how you can bundle and save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
Jonah Ray, Matt Myra, and then Matt Myra, and more Jonah Ray. The croissant. I give you croissant. There's a box of croissant on the stage.
I bit one.
It's pronounced croissandwich.
Tell everyone your name.
My name's Anya. Hello.
Don't worry, they don't get that excited about anything. Anya, you came to the show last night and you said, I spend all night in a basement and with no windows.
We were like, that's creepy.
Yeah. I think I made a kill room joke and you were like, no, I actually make croissant. And so you brought up, don't eat on the podcast or put the microphone away from your mouth. People will be furious.
We don't chew like you do.
Okay, yeah, there you go. I can hear you from here crunching. That's not the only chocolate one, is it?
Sorry, it's not a salad to eat.
I'm sorry, it's not a beer sandwich, Jonah.
There was another chocolate one.
Was this the other chocolate one?
This we get for sending me first.
This okay. is fun for you guys to watch, huh?
Hang on, I'm going
to
do it away.
It's light. It's very, very moist. He's fluffy. He's a delicious croissant.
What's the name of your croissanterie?
La Bamboche.
La Bamboche Patisserie.
No, they're good. Go
this
there.
Is the most boring episode of Cupcake Wars.
So, yeah. On this episode of Cupcake Wars, no cupcakes.
Just wars.
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to give you a shout out and actually start the podcast all day. Almost tore my eyes out. I was working all day in the hotel trying to get today's podcast up, but the internet in the hotel is so slow, like slower.
Oh, isn't that the worst thing in the world,
Jonah?
I said he was angry in the lobby. I came back from our little together walk, and I see angry Chris. You know angry Chris because he has both of his headphones in, and he's staring at his phone like it's going to do something.
The podcast was supposed to go up hours before. I couldn't get it out because of the internet in the hotel. People are starting to tweet at me like, what's going on? No podcast today? What's up? I feel responsible to send it out.
You know what that sounds like to me? Where's my free thing? Give me my free thing.
I know. Well, welcome to the internet. So yeah. I could not. So I didn't have a data plan on my phone.
Mr. Cheapo all of a sudden.
Not at all, but I was only going to be here for a day and a half, so I'm like, I'll be fine just surfing Wi-Fi. By the way, if you're American and you try to use data in Canada, $2 a meg. That is not, that's not a lot of data for $2 a meg.
Shaking your heads?
Don't do it.
Go, literally, like, checking Twitter one time, $1,000. Yeah. Way not worth it.
CAD data.
Not at all.
You know what I did? I was like, I'm going to add 300 megs Canada type. To my plan for $60.
That's what I ended up having to do in order to get the podcast.
Told you.
But In the process, I did tell the internet, hey, I'm going to get the podcast up today. The hotel internet really sucks. One of the first responses, someone just wrote, hashtag first world problems. Now, I want to put this on the table right now. The first world problems gag is way fucking over, okay? Let's get the fuck past it. It's like saying not or smoking. Like, fuck you. It's over.
Winning. Yeah.
You are.
Swing.
Yeah, like tiger blood or whatever. You just fucking throw it into that bin of hacky, useless, douchey phrases.
My first world problems.
That unfunny people use to try to be funny because they saw someone else do it 2 years ago. So let it. I moratorium. On the first world problems.
Wow, well, excuse me.
Actually, that's retro. That's making a comeback.
Oh, is that retro?
That's retro.
Oh, shit.
Oh, yeah. So I was finally able to get the podcast up today.
You know what I did? I went on a bike ride.
What?
I went on a Blixie bike.
I love to ride my bicycle. I love to ride my bike.
The rental bikes. And I took it out, and I was riding. I was having a delightful time. And then I had to go to the bathroom. And then I couldn't find a docking station for the bike.
Is that what you call a toilet?
Yes. I passed by many docking stations for my shit, but for the bike, nothing. And I started getting really scared.
Like you were going to shit the bike?
Yeah. I was very
that
afraid
should
of that.
Be a euphemism by, oh, that guy totally
really
shit the
shit
bike.
The bike.
Yeah. That's when you fuck something up so bad, because if you shit on a bike, it's a complete disaster.
Yeah, well, just because it's like, you know, it drips down, like, and then the spokes less. Just kick it right back up at you.
Yeah, it just turns into a shit fan.
Yeah, yeah,
just
exactly.
Like right back into
you're
your
just
own.
Just like Pigpen on a fucking bicycle going down, just a cloud of shit
so
mist.
I now, we replace first world problems with that guy shit the bike. So shit the bike is the new phrase.
Yeah, but it was a scary time. I literally started just like, I was riding around trying to figure out where one of those docking stations could be. And I was just like, fuck, come on, I don't need this now.
Did you start crying?
I was close.
Oh.
Did Matt go with you on the bike ride?
No,
he refused it.
I refused the bike ride.
We were
ride.
Walking, I was like, let's go on a bike ride together.
Here's why I refused it. $250 deposit. In Canada is like $1 million.
But you get it back if you don't fuck
the bike
up. Yeah,
in 10 days, in 10 Canada days is like 8 months.
How?
Wait.
How hand-to-mouth are you?
Matt, the calendars are the same. It's just
No, I'm pretty
sure.
It's
just
like Mars.
No, it's just the currency and the
Chris,
measurement system.
What time is it in L.A. right now?
Okay, I understand what you're saying.
Okay,
party
exactly.
Time? Is it party time?
Exactly, always
it's,
party
it's
time.
It's 2 o'clock April 12th in Los Angeles right
exactly.
Now.
Exactly.
1955.
No, so I just didn't want it tied up. What if the dollar takes another hit, that I'm losing more money?
You don't lose. You get it back.
I don't understand how this works.
And you were being so irritating when I was trying to figure out how to rent it. He just started, like, putting the seat up and down and then, like, ringing the bell like an idiot. It's just like, ding, 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 ding. You going to use this?
You want to test the bell, right? I mean, I'm not
you
crazy.
You didn't have to do shit.
I tested the bell for your safety because I thought we were friends.
Friends ride bikes together.
Now I think we see the source of the butt hurt.
Oh.
Twice, yes, I know. Fuck all bag shitting bike.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry that you didn't get to have a bike ride together today, but it's nice that you got to go to what you said was like the fanciest part of Toronto. Was there
it's
like
weird.
A,
like,
a chamber
I
orchestra
place,
on the street?
I described this place as hoity-toity, and then Amanda, the girl that's working with us on the show, she was like, I was like, oh, I went to Yorkville. She's like, well, that's very hoity-toity. I was like, I said the same thing. Yorkville, hoity-toity, since fucking who cares, you know?
You said there was a violinist on
the I come onto the street, and it's a fancy place. Literally, there's a violinist on the sidewalk going...
I hope they were doing it with a violin and not just with their mouths like you were
moment,
doing
everyone got out of their cars and started waltzing.
She was in black and white, and then someone dropped a red rose.
Yeah. Oh, it was beautiful. I was in slow motion.
And someone had a pearl necklace that exploded and then just
oh
pearls.
No yeah. you just murdered Bruce Wayne's parents again.
I did yeah, well, right after the opera.
Yeah.
Hey, do you like to ever dance with the devil by the pale moonlight?
Yeah.
I don't acknowledge that as the true origin of Batman.
Yep.
Thank you. It's true.
Yeah. That Batman classic, they might as well just put on the side of that one now. We have a very special guest on this episode that I am super excited. I mean, this guy, I think, you know,
I thought you said he was Jewish.
Oh, he is.
Not special.
Oh. What?
In comedy.
Okay, I'm going to allow it. I'm going to allow it. But he's a guy that I think all of us as comics, he's one of those guys that whenever he's on stage, you go back into the room to watch him perform. And I've I've known him for many years, and I am appalled that this is the first time I'm having him on the podcast. But please welcome to the stage Mr. Andy Kindler.
Yeah!
I'm so thrilled you're on the podcast, and I'm sorry it took so long.
No more apologies. That's what I just got from an Oprah repeat. No apologies, no shame, no guilt. And as my life coach says, and I will not be making eye contact. As my life coach says, slide into your dreams. Hey.
Wait, slide into your dreams?
I know. I mean,
you took some notes.
I just came up with some material.
Okay.
Okay?
Sure.
It won't go longer than 12 minutes. No.
Okay.
Okay. People at home or wherever you're downloading this, we all have glasses, right?
I don't.
Okay, so. We are the, I know, I have, I'm going to cover that.
Okay.
The three nearsighted stooges. That's one name. The three glasketeers.
That's a good one.
The astigmatists. The below average white guys.
I'll settle
Does
for that.
Do you know that reference anymore?
That's good. Average I don't know if guys? I do, yeah.
Huey Lewis and what else is in the news?
Here, I got one.
Those are the biggest ones.
It's our hip hop group, and it's called Nearside.
Hey, that's good. Yeah. Todd Glass is. No, I don't know. Do you want a croissant?
Do you want a croissant?
It's very, you know, it's very, a lot of emphasis on the croissants I know this year. You know what I'm saying? That's a kind of humor. It's a croissant shop. There's nothing but croissants in there. I say, you want a little heavy on the croissants.
That bit was very much like a croissant where you think it's one thing and then you bite it and you go, oh, there's actually more in here than I thought there was.
And then you're left feeling unfulfilled.
I think it's, exactly, it's how I act. You eat and then an hour later you feel logy.
I don't... So a couple things, Andy Kindler. The first time I ever saw you do stand-up was in, I think, 92, maybe. It was one of the Young Comedian specials.
It was the one I was on.
Yeah. They only let you do one.
Why am I working to them?
I don't know.
I'm going to get one. Do you have a crowd app? I'm going to download my crowd app.
Yeah, yeah. Do you want to get your crowd app?
Yeah.
So they respond?
All right.
But you you did that special with, it was you and Janine and I think like Judd Apatow and Bill Bellamy.
Ray Romano.
And Ray Romano, that's right.
Who of those people didn't quite get to the next level?
Bill Bellamy.
Besides him, two people. This guy, he was booty call though. I wasn't booty.
You were not. He worked at MTV, but I also, the first time I met you was at MTV in like 95, I think. And you had a bit, there was a show on with these ladies, it was called The Mommies. It was a sitcom called The Mommies.
Oh yeah, I remember
this. And you
this.
Hated that show with such a passion. I remember seeing you perform, you were like, The Mommies have a sitcom, where's my sitcom? You did like 20 minutes on why you didn't have a sitcom and you listed a bunch of premises that your sitcom would be.
I also... Elbows drowned right there.
Okay.
I'm Red
drowned?
Bull. Yeah, is that Red Bull treating you all right, buddy?
I almost drowned it. I also did my impression of an NBC executive in 1990. I forgot what the year it was like. Get me the mommies on the phone. Oh, also fire Letterman. But get me those mommies on the phone. I think it was the other way. Here's what it was. Sorry. Not that anything will trigger a big laugh, but it was Sarah. Here's the bit from 85 years ago. Sarah, cancel my 2:30. Let Letterman go. And get the mommies on the phone!
stand up all the way.
But you
do it again and stand up all the way.
And get the mommies on the phone!
Yeah!
That was good. You put emphasis on...
You know who does that?
No.
They don't probably know this because I don't think they have the commercials. Maybe Larry the Cable Guy does the Prilosec OTC commercials.
Oh, they don't have cable up here.
Are you familiar with Larry the Cable
No, but
guy?
Do you get the Prilosec? You get those commercials?
I think
no!
I think you should update it and be Larry the Satellite Provider.
Like, Larry why the not? Satellite Provider. The Kilometer.
Larry the Rogers guy.
Larry the Fiber
you got
Optic Cable Layer.
You croissant shed yes. in your arm hair.
Where else would I get it? Weirdo.
Earlier, Matt was eating a cookie. He just
sure was.
Cookie dust all over his fucking sweater. Yeah. I was like, hey, you got some cookie dust? He was like, yep.
Just own it.
He did a judo thing with you. He went with your energy.
Yeah.
Yep, that's what I'm doing. No. Oh, so Larry the Cable Guy, he says, get the Prilosec, which is anti-acid thing. Goes and just don't, and he goes, and just don't get heartburn. And I thought it was the only time he was ever funny. Like he was saying, like that was the joke. Just don't get heartburn. But it was a bad reading of take this product and you won't get heartburn. And just don't get heartburn.
You ever seen his movie? You ever seen
where he, which where one? They th- he thinks he's going to Iraq, but he lands in Mexico?
No, that's another one. There's another one.
You've seen two?
There's two. I've seen them.
Witless Protection?
Witless Protection Program. There's a scene where it's like he fell asleep naked in the desert.
Been
and,
there.
When they capture him and they have him just naked and he has his hat over his junk, mm-hmm. but he has like sunburn all over, except the sunburn on his leg, there's like a tan line of a huge dick.
Oh.
And I want to believe that he was like, it's like, let's make sure.
He's like, it'll be a funny bit. Trust me.
Yeah. And everyone think I have a huge dick because huge dicks are hilarious.
Well, the tiny dick Mark ain't going to read on camera.
I just feel like
he doesn't even talk that way. He's like a normal guy.
From Nebraska, yeah. I think.
And
Canada, he was in Cars. He was in Cars, though.
He was
right?
in Cars and Cars, too. He plays Meter. Exactly.
Wow, you guys are really on fire.
No one knows who Larry the Cable Guy is here, right?
That was also the Pixar people. Get me Larry the Cable Guy on the phone.
That's interesting that you guys don't know Larry the Cable Guy.
No, they don't.
Here. All right, it just turned into an auction.
We just don't like them.
This just turned into an auction.
Yeah.
This crowd is surly, don't you think?
This is a... Yeah.
No. I think it's more hipster defensiveness than it is.
That's the same thing, isn't it?
But I want to hear kind of about your evolution as a comic and when you started and doing clubs and then when you started to kind of like turn against the business and then that, like you're sort of everything... You're the ultimate deconstructionist, in my opinion. You deconstruct the industry, you deconstruct your own set as it's happening, you deconstruct the audience. Was that always that way?
Well, when I first started, I was terrible, as many people are, but I didn't know it was terrible. I thought I had a good, I mean, I brought a certain amount of self-hate into the, you know, I had that going for me going in, which is good. Well, you need that. And I was always loved self-deprecation. So I loved Woody Allen, and I loved Letterman and Carson and Albert Brooks. I loved that. So when I first started comedy and it wasn't going well, I would comment that it wasn't going well right at the beginning. Like the joke wouldn't go. I go, well, that joke certainly didn't get a laugh of any type. And it got a similar reaction to this right here. But then over the years, I went through different breakthroughs and like, you know, not to get spiritual about it, but I know you do. But about a few years ago, I realized that I really wasn't saying everything that was in my mind. I was editing myself and not for language like you with the potty mouth.
Right.
But
it's true.
They take everything at face value. What is this? What is this? Non-sarcasm? What is this? No facetious night? Show that you're not facetious at the door, and we'll let you right in.
Show that you're not facetious. How would you show someone you're not facetious at the door?
It's ladies' face value night. Ladies, to take everything at face value, come on in free. They thought it was something else, face value, like I'd value women's faces. I don't go that way. I'm not Don Cook. I'm not a Don Cook.
Do you have a ticket in your pocket? No, it's a piece of shit. And then he actually pulls out a piece of shit. You're like, well, he's not facetious. We got to let him in.
That's what we're looking for.
It's very
literal. That's the kind of act we want for JFL 43. No. So I realized that I was editing myself, and I started to say everything. So now I think it's the boats, and not to talk about myself in the third person, but there's a lot of controversy online. Some people call me a genius. Others call me hugely talented. All right, so I could not deliver that to you. I couldn't get through that. So horrible. The best thing I do, I think, is deconstruct, like talk about, but then it also can be, I think, the most annoying thing I do. Because sometimes I think the crowd goes, all right, at one point, do you have to, can you let one, you can't go, oh, I'm picking up a can. Oh, is it a can? Why do they have bread on it? Why did I say that bread on it? Why am I talking about cans? Oh, am I the can guy?
So do you literally, you say everything? I mean,
right.
Because like, I think most comics are like, oh, I can't say that, or that's not developed enough. But you kind of go up on stage with cards and you just work it out on stage.
Yeah, but not like Michael Richards where I go, you know what I'm going to try? A racist rant and see my racist rant bit.
It's funny, too, because if you saw the set list from that night, he was like, oh, shopping, working out, racist rant. Yeah. My dog's weird. He never got to that weird dog.
Just on his card, he just wrote a big N in marker.
What was that racial epithet I was going to... Oh, I see.
Right? Oh, I forgot it. Oh, this is why I write things down.
Also, again, I've said this many times. I'll say it again. No one blames the Laugh Factory on these horrible eruptions. Why are people playing that terrible club?
I don't look at me. I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get it.
You guys know the Laugh Factory.
No, they don't. Why don't you people read a newspaper from local Hollywood about a horrible mainstream club that's been around for many years that no one's ever liked?
The least you guys could do is pick up the Venice Argonaut.
Yes. What are you people? Read a Venice Argonaut, people. Yeah.
Guys, pick up the downtown homeless newspaper. It helps support
I do not associate with...
I got the solution. Next year, we fly them all out for 3 months.
Then we bring them back.
Then we bring them back, and we do the show.
And then every reference destroys. Yeah.
Everybody here goes to Los Angeles on Hartwick.
That's Yay!
USA! USA!
They still won't do it. Even if we're flying them there.
I don't know if I want to travel down
what
there.
What is the it's equivalent of, what is the Canadian equivalent of people canning USA? You guys don't go Canada, do you?
Stephen Harper.
Does any other country chant?
He's my brother-in-law!
Does any other country chant their own fucking name?
No, just...
Canada.
Yeah, I think America might be the only one.
England. It's funny, yeah.
I was in Canada in January. I started to get into the Canadian Olympic thing. I think it was, I don't remember where it was. It was somewhere when this happened. And so I'm getting excited, and the Canadian team, they win third place in the relay, and I'm in my hotel room, woo, woo, woo. And then 5 minutes later, they go, oh, by the way, Canada, you didn't pass the baton right. And the Canadian runners are sobbing on the track. And my heart was broken, and I said to myself, do I need this?
And so you allowed yourself to get too emotionally invested in Canada for
and
a minute.
And I closed with a Mussolini bit.
What a ride.
Ich bin ein Berliner. No, he wasn't saying that, right?
No. But that was Mussolini's Hitler impression. It was so funny.
Ich bin ein Berliner.
That's good, Moose. Moose, you're hilarious.
Remember when the Berlin Wall was still up? Huh?
They're 12. They don't remember that.
They don't remember anything past before Research in Motion.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
You could tag that. What was that, a BlackBerry 2? Come on, tag it with a nerdy thing.
What is that, a Trio 750?
Yeah, what is that? Oh, they just got it bought out by Abacus International.
What, are they still on an analog signal?
Yeah, I'd love to use your palm, but I left my stylus back in 1993!
Oh my God, Andy, are you okay? Are you okay?
1993.
I always tried to make this bit work, and I never could, where I would say, the 80s called, and they want their hacky reference from another time period thing that called bit back.
I love that.
And I was never able to...
That would fit right into my... I used to do the confused hack comic, so he would say... I was down at the city hall today, and there's a guy screaming, and he's yelling, and he's got his clothes up. And that was the mayor!
I always like to do my favorite shitty comic is like the comic that just relies on references from like his youth and trying to connect with people like, you know, like Dan Cook kind of does that where it's just like a specific thing.
Don't put him
thing.
Down.
Nah.
People
but
love
like,
him.
It's like, but it's a guy that does that just can't really remember. He could like never really remember what it's exactly called. It's like, yo, man, you remember growing up playing board games and you play the one, the bubble that you would do the dice in the thing and you would push it. What was that? What was that?
It's like
what
apologies.
Was that called? It was like something. Trouble. Y'all remember Trouble? And then just tries to save it at the end.
There's a whole time period that was probably because I'm very old, very, very old. You know what I'm saying? I'm doing prostate jokes. I'm talking about. I do a lot of jokes about my mother-in-law. About going to. I say I'm going to go on a pleasure trip.
A pleasure
I'm going to end up in the home.
What about mother-in-law prostate jokes?
I don't really have any, but I'm working on them after I watch the Joe Theismann prostate commercials. Now, look, what was I talking about?
I have no idea.
I missed a whole time period. Like the people say, what am I, Mighty Morphin Power Rangers? They always had the Transformers. Yeah. I don't know what the hell that joke would mean when they use those as references.
For me, that's what's the fucking the one with the
hippies?
Pokemon. That's Pokemon.
That's a classic.
Yeah. How
Pokemon
did you get that? How the fuck are you guys that mind melded that he just goes, well, "What's the thing?" and he holds out his hand. You go, Pokemon.
We both have discussed how our cutoff for like kids things was Pokemon.
Yeah. What came after that? What came right after that?
After Pokemon?
Trapper. I like Trapper Keeper.
I really thought you were gonna
is that
say
anything. Is that good?
I thought you were gonna say Trapper John M.D.
No, that's my wheelhouse. Yeah. That is my wheelhouse.
Every time I hear
that. Why did they laugh at that? Trapper John?
Because
they love MASH.
They like words.
Every time I hear Pokemon, I can't help but hear Todd Glass's bit about, you know, couldn't a prostitute be a good mother? Where she's like, I don't let a Chinese businessman shit on my chest so you can buy Pokemon cards all day. But it's just the way he says Pokemon that fucking kills me every time. What was your sort of transit? Because when I first started seeing you live, it was in the sort of Largo, you know, like what came to be popularly known as the alternative comedy crowd. So did you kind of come in?
Whoa!
Did you? Robin Williams.
Mm. Look at this. It's Table Man. Look at this. I'm arm person.
Dan's like, don't do it to me.
I'm strong. I'll drink from a straw like a gay guy from the 70s.
Hey, man, get off my lawn.
I'm a black guy from the 40s.
Well, hello there.
Oh, that made me sick.
He nailed it.
I felt racism erupting through my genetics. Somewhere in my past, I was in the Rat Pack. Well, hello there.
On Robin Williams, it manifests itself in arm hair. Whenever he feels any racism coming, it's just arm hair growth. It
starts to stand straight up.
The other night I said, I'm like Robin Williams if he was alive comedically.
Well done.
Look at the crowd. Hey,
come on.
Don't tear down our idols.
Mork and Mindy just started airing in Canada, so they're in the midst of Robin Williams' fever.
How is Howie Mandel different from Robin Williams? There's no difference.
How
is
Howie Mandel
different?
Well, you guys know Howie like Mandel?
It's the same thing, though, isn't it? Give me a come on, anything for a laugh.
Yeah,
I think
a lot of sweat, a lot of cocaine.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't think Robin Williams has ever done drugs. What are you guys talking about?
You're doing the eye thing.
I was a comic in the 80s. So I don't know what anybody's talking about.
You know what's really hard about the commenting on the set not going well is that if you don't do it right, the audience just feels bad.
That's what happens a lot of the times and still happens. Also, my theory is that comics, that we all over-exaggerate how badly we're doing. So if a guy is not like, I'm like, what? What's the matter? You don't like my act?
So if you're not Cicero from Skyrim, come on, you guys. Anybody? Okay, good. A couple of you.
But people, I like that. I mean, a lot of times they are, they will think that they'll just take it. A lot of times, here's my other theory. If you're talking conversationally, so that people don't think you're doing your act.
Right.
Now you may claim it's the jokes, but what I'm saying... I'm making observations in the moment, like I could be talking to you in the moment. I'm not saying what I'm saying right now is funny, but let's say what I was saying right now is funny, but it wasn't part of my act. You'd still go, too conversational. I didn't see the big wind up, and he didn't go, and here comes the hoo-hoo.
The hoo-hoo.
So some people think that I'm having trouble because I talk about how much I'm having trouble.
That's what your album should be called, Here Comes the Hoo-Hoo.
Here Comes the Hoo-Hoo. He's with me in the front. I can't help it.
And then the first negative review, the hoo-hoo never showed up. Yeah.
He should have gone with the hoo-ha. Yeah. Or ha-ha. Or anything, because I wasn't laughing. He stinks. Get out of the business.
Get out of the business.
Do you feel relatively bulletproof on stage in just terms of, like, you know...
Well, ever since I got the vest.
I wish the podcast listener didn't see both hands clasp the mic. As Andy leaned forward, two elbows on the desk.
I do sometimes feel... Here's the way I feel. Joe has talked to me about this, how he's fearless, and he has the crowd in the palm of his hand, and he destroys every crowd, and there's no mercy, and they're going down, and he could kick the shit out of any other comedian.
Yeah, sounds like me. I'm sorry.
What was the question again?
It was, do you feel kind of bulletproof?
Oh, so sometimes I feel fearless, but then sometimes I feel very fearful. And then sometimes... I think the sign of a good comedian... And is that you are restless and you don't love what you do. Not that you have to hate what you do, but that you don't always love what you do and that you're constantly, there's a lot of different emotions. I think if you have too much bravado, you're Dane Cook. If you have too little bravado, you never leave the bedroom. And then if you have what you have a ticket to Hollywood.
But Chris Rock.
Florida.
But Chris Rock does have a bravado to his comedy and it's not shitty.
Well, he has brilliant comedy, but I have to say, and not that, and only because I haven't said terrible things about every comedian, let me continue burning more bridges by saying that I think he's brilliant, but I've liked him, I've actually enjoyed him better in small clubs when he's like working towards a special than when he's like really delivering the special.
That's true. When you see him when he's working on stuff, he's very quiet and very just like hitting the jokes, but then when he does it at a big show, that's when it becomes pacing back and forth and yelling a lot.
But that's a stylistic thing, and if he's thinking of working with me, or if there's any comic, if there's any comic I've said terrible things about who could see their way clear to throwing me a bone.
But that's also just the environment of the rooms. Like if you're in a club, it's sort of like if you're strutting around on stage, it's a little weird. But if you're in a theater with 3,000 people,
that's a problem.
Then you're projecting out to that. Like I kind of wanted to see. I wanted to see Louis' set last night at the Comedy Bar when you did the alternative show, because I saw his set at the Sony Center for like 3,000 people, and then I wanted to see him again. I mean, I've seen him a million times, but I kind of wanted to see some of those jokes in a smaller, just as a comedy nerd.
Like, well, he picked worked fantastically in that room.
Yeah,
and it was very much like about, you know, sitting in the courtyard and this other bit about this old lady, and it was great. So I think that. Like, that Comedy Bar, to me, is a perfect-size room, but there's no money in 100 people doing anything, right? No, I'm saying people always, like, if you're Jim Gaffigan, I can't tell Jim Gaffigan, look, here's what you should do. Instead of doing the 3,000-seater and making 100,000, why don't you do a 100-seater, and you'll have a better time. And people like Jim Gaffigan are people who I think are hilarious, but I think some people work better, like Brian Regan could probably do any size room, but still, just by the nature of stand-up, I don't think it's the same thing in a big place as it is in a tiny room.
The jokes land differently. I mean, like, it really is, there is sort of, there is an arc to the jokes, whether you're lobbing like way for the balcony or if it's like an intimate room,
right?
And you're just kind of placing them.
I yell, don't you? I do this all the time. I never can understand amplification. I go, they can't possibly hear me back there.
I remember that when you did the Young Comedian special, you were very like, you were jumping around on stage. There was a lot of physicality.
It's so totally different. It's frightening for me to look at. I mean, I have to give myself a break about it, that I was on some kind of sleep medicine. No, I'm sorry. No, that I was, I did think I was conscious of having energy then.
Yeah.
Even though now I would say, or maybe even back then I'd say, like, if I was a hacky, hey, ha, oh, bing. Yeah. That wouldn't have, actually, that wasn't bad.
That was pretty good.
So, yeah, but I'm really,
that's not
me now. When I
do you think there's sort of a, do you think there's sort of a kind of a Steve Martin-esque approach where it's like he's playing that Vegas club performer and you're sort of playing that like, hey, I'm this comic guy.
I don't think it's quite the same thing, but I do feel like I'm constantly calling up a Catskills comedian inside me that I'm making fun of, but that I also love.
Yeah.
Like I like bad jokes sometimes, or like online on Twitter, like I'll do a really bad pun and people go, hey, yeah, that was good. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I don't think it's a, like, I'll have a joke like, I have a Mexican restaurant, a comedy restaurant, it's called, Is This Thing Flan? I'm not taking that to the Higgs Boson people. And,
I like to think that there are.
We found the reference for this crowd.
I'm not calling that this on the same level as dark matter or Heisenberg's principle of uncertainty. You know what I'm saying? Or Schrodinger's, is it in the box? Is it not in the box?
You must be the doctor. We are the Higgs boson people.
I got nothing. I was going to. I ran out of jargon.
Yeah.
The Andy Kindler comedy uncertainty principle.
I prove that every night. Am I in the club? Am I not? Yeah, I wrote this. I wrote this as a liner note to a DVD that I sold 30 copies of. But the liner note was, I was like a show I did in 2003, so I was doing a glossary because I released it in 2008. Mm-hmm. So it was like the joke was of if a tree fell in the forest, and it was explaining who George Lopez was to someone in 2008. So I said, the chances are, if a tree fell in the forest, chances are George Lopez wouldn't think of anything funny to say about it. I laughed at my own material. I broke my Bill Mark rule. Who laughs during the joke?
So I don't know if you guys know this, but at the Montreal version of the festival every year, Andy gives kind of a keynote speech. It's a state of the industry where he So a few of you know. The rest of you are just hate Montreal. when did the state of the industry start? Because it's definitely grown from a very informal thing to like it is an event that's talked about. Are you going to go to Kindler's State of the Industry? You know, like
right,
it's
right.
a thing now.
Well, I'd like to do it in a way that I could. Move the year up, but I can't do it. You know what I'm saying? Make it seem like it just started last year. Because I feel like I said like 1995, people go, what? Did he start? When he started, did he have a wind-up? Come on, what would be old-timey? Did he do it on an Edison spool?
Yeah.
Is that what he did?
A Nickelodeon?
A hearing horn.
Yeah, so it started in 1995, and I'd done a thing. When I wrote an article called The Hack Handbook for National Lampoon, still on my website, and I want to tell everybody, my website never changes. A lot of people don't like it when there's new information on the website. Static city, baby. Carved in stone. Yeah. No things flashing around. And The Hacks Handbook is there. And I told, it was like 1991, National Lampoon did a Best of Comedy issue right when the comedy boom imploded. So I did a whole thing on how to be a hack comic. And then I did a live presentation of it in Montreal with like Blaine Capatch and Patton Oswalt and John Ridley and all these guys. And then they suggested I come back and do a speech. And my manager, Bruce Smith, suggested I do a State of the Industry. It was his idea, the name of it. And then we just started doing it. And it's in this little convention room of whatever hotel there's only been two hotels that the festival's had since I started. And then it's just for the industry people. Well, sometimes people can buy passes to it, but who would? So, and it's really me just saying everything that really bothers me and getting it off my chest.
Does it worry? I mean, is there any kind of part where you're like, oh, I'm going to rip on all these shows and these networks and these executives, but I kind of want them to hire me, so maybe I...
Every second it's that way. In fact, I'm nervous talking about it now. I thought maybe a lot of people don't know about it. Keep it quiet. Yeah, no, I do worry about that. But the other thing, it's been very liberating. And the speech has changed. I was like pure rage sometimes earlier on. I was like, Brostein Gray doesn't know their ass! You know, it's like, you know, screaming about management companies. And now I've got to try to make it a little bit more roast-like.
Right.
Because if it's too angry, sometimes it's good. But then it's like everybody feels bad.
What did you? I wasn't at Montreal this year, so I didn't see. What did you do about Louis? Where you're like, well, he didn't say anything when I saw him the other night.
Oh well, what I did was, and it's available. I'm not plugging this website, and there's nothing I could plug. No one's paying me to do anything. All right, so if I say, boy, I really enjoy this Gap shirt, they'll sue me for they don't want to associate with me. But there's a website called laughspin.com. Sure, I've got some back end on it. There's a 6-minute excerpt of the Louis thing. And the thing that got controversial about it was, first of all, I did an interview about it afterwards that a lot of people thought was the speech. And so it's like, if you didn't know what it was like, why is this guy rambling 30 minutes of his criticism of Louis C.K.? So what it was the 6-minute excerpt is right there. So I think everybody, if they listened to it, they could appreciate what was happening. But it was about my mixed feelings, because I think Louis is hilarious, but I have mixed feelings about the show and mixed feelings about the way he's presented and the way the media embraces him. See, it's not funny in this setting. But a couple of things I said that were like, you know, more jokes were like, he always says he changes material every year, so my joke was like, yeah, you know, like he points it out.
Yeah.
It's like, well, I think all comics change their material, so I did a joke like that he was one day away from coming up with the unified field theory, but he had that year deadline, so he had to. So some of it was lighthearted like that, and I had like The Emperor Wears No Clothes, written, directed, and produced by Louis C.K.
Okay.
Emperor's Clothing Costume, designed by Louis C.K. So there was a few major things. One of the things was the tweets on the plane that were really anti-Sarah Palin tweets, but you know what I'm talking about, when he was on a plane and he just started saying things about Sarah Palin.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh,
he was,
yeah, yeah.
And I think he seemed to express that he was kind of drunk.
And he was really drunk. He said, I'm drunk. He said, clearly, I'm drunk. But then he said things that had nothing to do with Sarah. It's not like, I oppose her foreign policies. No, it was really just graphic things. So it was all these things like that I kind of thought people were giving a pass for. And then it gets into that whole thing, like they say comics should never apologize, which I don't agree with, or anything you say on stage, or if you're a comedian, anything you tweet. But it's like, it's very kind of convoluted to talk about it without actually listening to it. But it also, the part that was kind of cathartic, if that's a word, was I had my own relationship with Louis, which I had a good relationship with him, and I had what I thought was kind of a
on my own part of falling out or changing my thing. So I, when I was doing these things, I got into this robotic trance where I said, I admit to you that Louis C.K. is a very talented person. Yes, he has made me laugh very much over many times, but I do believe that his show is over. And I said, and 10 years ago at Caroline's, we had a personal thing, and I've always carried that grudge around. And all of everything I'm saying now is colored by my own feelings and envy and jealousy. So it was like, it was really good because it was a thing where I really was able to put it out there where I think I made valid points. Many people don't agree with me, but I also was talking about my role in it. So, and I haven't gotten a business phone call since.
But I mean,
look at these guys. These guys are ready to. We are not involved in this in any way. Management is not responsible.
I really like Louis C.K. show.
No, but I think for Louis, for a guy who kind of. It says what I feel like is, you know, like he kind of says what he wants about stuff. I think he would respect that you have opinions and not that you wouldn't, you know, like try to color them up for.
Yeah, I know. Everybody has different points of view on this. It's like I have a thing, you know, putting aside the Louis thing, which is, by the way, going to come out on Blu-ray. it's called My Ambivalence About Louis C.K. It's always this rule in comedy that you can't talk about other comedians. I've always thought that was bullshit. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't say I invented this because I remember George Miller. Remember George Miller?
Yeah.
He passed away? 1992, he comes out on Letterman and he says, I just got back from a meeting where we decided that Robin Williams is not a genius, just merely annoying. So I had never heard anybody on TV say that. So I'm not the first person to do this, but, you know, going after people, other comics is like, you know, a lot of comics said to me, I just don't think you should do that.
Right.
But it, always when it was Carrot Top or Dane Cook or Jay Leno, it's easier.
Right.
It's harder when it's someone we all agree is hugely talented.
Right. And so do you sort of feel, in some cases...
I'm talking about me as being...
Of course.
No, I'm sorry.
In some cases, though, do you feel a responsibility to sort of like, you know, expose what you see or kind of holes in things that people, you know...
I think I have to be careful about it because I do feel you can get to a sanctimonious thing where, like, I'm not the voice of, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't want to be the truth machine,
right.
You know? But I think it's more of a compulsion. So I think I have to say it, kind of, and it brings me relief and hopefully can make people, you know, like I do a joke that I'd like to do an impression of Jay Leno. If he was a comedian. Jay Leno! And I've done jokes over the years, like one of my favorite jokes, but it's cruel, as I said, who died and made Jim Belushi a big star? So
I got one of my favorite ones. One of my favorite ones I saw a few years ago was when Kathy Griffin had that show called Life on the D-List.
Right,
you go, D-List, don't sell yourself long.
Oh, I remember that now. Oh, God. Wow, I forgot that. Oh, thanks for bringing that up. That was good. Yeah, so there's great joy in that. But I can't say that I'm like, you know, if it wasn't for me, you know, I'm not curing cancer. Although, you know what? Give it a shot. Use my comedy off-label.
But is it, you know, do you worry sometimes or do you, or I guess you don't worry. You do worry all the time. But you know, because obviously the most natural response from some people, like on Twitter or whatever, if you're making fun of me, like, you're just jealous because you...
That's the go-to. Here's
who's
the go-to.
Saying, who's talking like that?
They actually say they bright out.
And it's just wingdings?
I think...
Lady Gaga.
There's a guy that comes on and goes... No. That is everyone's go-to. Everyone's fallback position. Everyone's assumption about... Everything I say, who doesn't like what I say, is that I am only doing it because I am jealous of where my career is. And I would like to make more money. I would like to not have to rent. I would enjoy not being $30,000 in debt. I would like the money from a 3,000-seat place, but have to only play a 100-seat place. But that's not why I'm saying these things. I know in my heart that I'm saying it because I'm compelled to, and I think it's funny, right? They're jokes. But I don't think you can always go, hey, they're jokes, people, all right? I don't really hate Hitler. No, that's not true. But but people always go, My perfect example of it is I always put down Curb Your Enthusiasm because I've been watching Seinfeld a lot in reruns. I think that show is so hilarious. And then I say, oh, I see how what Larry David's saying could be hilarious and likable. But then Curb Your Enthusiasm starts and they reel you in because he's a funny guy, Larry David. He's hilarious, but he goes, but all of a sudden he reels you in with this, the Seinfeld type dialogue. And then he's living on Mars. he finds a homeless guy in an urn. And in the last scene, it all comes around that the guy from the first scene that you didn't think would show again, he goes, here's your pizza. So
that's the name of your second album.
Here's your pizza.
Here's your pizza.
So people online go, where's your show? So my thing is like, where's your show? That's why I always go, what if I went to a restaurant? I didn't like the restaurant. I said, I'm sorry, I don't like this restaurant. They go, oh, where's your French restaurant? let me taste your Coco Van. Are we sweetening it now? Is that what's happening?
It's good. Yeah, it's good. So what is it ultimately that you... I mean, what is it ultimately that you want to...
Dancing with the Stars?
That's it. Oh, my God. I would love that. That would be so amazing. Why do I have a weird feeling that you would actually win? I feel like there's something...
thank you, Judge. Asshole. That's how I would deal with it.
Did you ever do Last Comic Standing? You didn't do Last Comic Standing.
Oh, well, that's another thing. Talk about hypocrisy. No, I made fun of that show because they had that Ross and... they had Ross and... who were those guys?
Rachel.
Rachel, yeah.
No. Ross and Rachel.
I wish I could... show everybody my angle of that with your face. Ross and Rachel. You swung me into it, and I was confused.
Yeah.
No, it was Ross and the guy from Bob Reed and Ross, and they were the judges, and it was like... So I was broke, and NBC said, would you like to be a judge? And all of a sudden, I turned around on the contest thing. But I used to make fun of it so much in Montreal about how much I hated the show. But then they... So I took it. I needed the money. But then they also said they weren't going to do anything cheesy with it. So it turned out to be an amazing experience because, except for the fact that it was a contest, which I couldn't control, I didn't. No one had to be Simon Cowell. I spent a lot of time with Greg Giraldo and Natasha Leggero. And so it was like, it turned out to be a great experience, you know. And the comics were funny, you know, especially the last 10 comics. And then, you know, America votes, folks. I can't do anything about that. Sure, I wanted the cross.
Neither can we. A guy just yelled from the crowd.
He just yelled, neither can we, because they're Canadian. You said, I can't do anything about that, America. And he goes, neither can we.
Is that the name of a person?
No. It's, well...
Gideon's Weep?
No. What did you say?
Gideon's Weep?
Gideon's Weep is a delightful... it's where, where they say, given to the hotel by the Gideons in the Bible, actually came from the book, The Gideon's Weep.
Yeah.
Oh,
wow. No, it has nothing to do with that.
He did. Now he got me going. Ross and Rachel, Gideon's Weep.
You were saying. You said. I'm sorry, America. And since we're in Toronto, someone said. I don't remember anymore because it was an hour ago.
No, but you know, look at this. Britain's Got Talent, dog act wins. America's Got Talent, a dog act wins. When is it gonna? Are we gonna get the message? Ever? That we're this is where something horrible is happening to us.
Would you feel
don't like dogs?
Oh, I like dogs. I could see one dog winning a talent contest, but two, I start to get suspicious.
You're
it's fixed.
You're so
no cats.
You're so suspicious. You can't even talk.
Now people are gonna be. I did a show once called Pet Star where I evaluated a cat who someone had tied a fork to their paw and guided them into a bowl of spaghetti. I gave them a 10 or something like that. And the other judges, one of which was, I think, Joan Rivers' daughter, and then somebody, I blocked the whole thing out. She said, you gave that a 10? They tied a fork to the cat's hand. A paw? What is it, a hand?
Oh, it's a paw.
Yeah.
It's like a...
Cat paw.
They thought I should call the authorities on the person for cruelty. What, these people don't know about Pet Star? Why don't you get acquainted with horrible cable television or a show that Mario Lopez hosted before Extra. What do you people have your head in the sand? How are you going to deal with the oil shale sands situation? Attica or something.
And he's getting suspicious again.
Yeah. When I go up like that, you know I got nothing.
I like Attica or something.
Inherit the right.
Like, I want to get mad.
You're a witness, Mr. Hartwick.
Thank you, Mr. Kinlaw.
Yeah, I reserve the right to redirect.
I'd like to point out that the plaintiff's defendant is a Jew.
Sorry, that was just the character.
It's so good to say Jew. You shouldn't say it, though, because you're almost an Aryan of some type.
Oh.
You
know what I mean?
You got like a young Hitler thing. You would have been the young Hitler with a twist back then. You know, a young Nazi, the young Hitler youth with a twist.
Are you talking about Kid Hitler over here?
Yeah.
Kid Hitler.
Hey, yo, kids, what are you worried about? Look at me. Yeah. It's not so bad.
Hey, Kid Hitler, nice mustache. Whatever.
Yeah, you would have refused to cut. You would have said there would never have been the Third Reich because you would have told him to go with the goatee part. Hitler would have not been threatening with the goatee.
I know.
Hitler was a brutal dictator who was.
They don't have.
Who reigned over Nazi
Germany. They're so nice in Canada, they can't even conceptualize a Hitler.
Yeah. I'm going for a laugh, though. Hitler's mustache, now he's got a beatnik like goatee.
No, it's just. You just move the mustache down to here, to the beard.
Mein Kampf, man. Mein Kampf.
Third Reich on, man.
Yeah,
Reich on.
Yeah.
Reich on.
You don't have to do it all
third
the way.
Third Reich's a charm.
Yeah.
What? What was that? What did he say?
Third Reich's a charm.
Go ahead. Have you win. He gets the croissant.
That's basically, okay, you ready? Third Reich's a charm is if TBS made a sitcom about.
Very funny.
Third Reich's a charm. Meet Chad Hitler. He's just inherited.
Meet Chad Hitler.
Tune in after Franklin and Bash.
Third Reich's a charm.
Third Reich's a charm.
Third Reich from the sun.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Look, John Lithgow, he overacted so much, I thought he was a Nazi a couple of times.
I mean,
I know it
on.
Didn't fit, but I just want to say something negative about his acting.
Yeah. Would you feel bad? Would you feel weird if, like, you know, let's say you get a show that you really want to do and you pour your soul into it and then someone else, like, tears it down? Does it bother, like, are you bothered by criticism or does it not bother you?
Every comedian is thin-skinned to a certain degree, but, you know, I do think, like, some of the people I've made fun of who shall remain named. No, like, I used to make fun of Sandler, but like Sandler, like a lot of the people I made fun of were people I thought I loved so much. Like, that's not always true, but I loved Adam
Sandler. That's interesting. So you're actually kind of dealing with, like, why did you let me down from your point
of view? That's exactly what it is. So I used to love Sandler when he was a stand-up on Saturday Night Live, and they started making these crazy movies. And so.
Do you mean the crazy movies?
Yeah. How do you do the voice?
I can never. Crazy movies.
Can you do the voice?
No.
Oh, it's like a. Yeah, sure. Oh, it's I'm a crazy elegant little bit. Ah, Christopher Hartwick.
No? I'm hoping.
I do Tavis Smiley. What's that?
I just want to get in one of his movies, so I can't do it.
Oh,
I can't do the voice.
See, people withdraw from me, but he doesn't. If he doesn't put his movies out to be reviewed. Which he doesn't do.
Yeah.
Like, you can't review his movies before they come out. So I think at some point, there is a thing where you might be, if you're really creative and you've gone into this thing where you're making the same thing, maybe at some deep level, but maybe I'm ascribing psychological and philosophical pinnings to a person that don't exist.
Oh,
am I young?
Have any of the comics ever kind of taken you aside and been like, that really bummed me out when you said that? And then have you ever had to.
Oh, you mean about the specific person?
Yeah.
I mean, I've had unpleasant experiences with many, not all the people I've talked about, but
most unpleasant. Who was it?
No, I mean, Adam Sandler. I saw it at a thing. I think you were there too. It was Ken Ober's.
Oh, was it Ken Ober's funeral? I wasn't at.
Oh, okay. So I was there, and I saw him, and he said, "Hey, don't worry, I've let all that stuff go," which I didn't know all that stuff was.
I hear
held.
They like there's somebody that works at Happy Madison that keeps track of whenever he's made fun of for him.
Are you serious?
Yeah,
that can't be true.
I've heard that. That's a thing I heard.
That's rare.
Sorry, guys. I just don't have all the facts. Just things I've heard in passing.
Yeah. Like it or not, it's true.
This guy doesn't make as much as the other people do, but he does make a nice living tailing people. This is the guy, Happy Madison, who's paid to...
The snitch.
What is this, short attention span theater?
Oh, my God. Oh. And now here's seven comics talking about the Flintstones. I'm Mark Maron. He hosted that.
He did.
Maron hosted.
So did Jon Stewart, didn't he?
They had a couple different hosts.
Yeah.
Yeah, had a couple different hosts.
And nobody asked. I'm bitter about things 30 years ago, 20 years ago. No one asked me to goddamn do it. How come I wasn't Brad Pitt?
I loved when Brad Pitt hosted Short Attention Span Theater. Yeah.
Hey, I'm funnier than Brad Pitt. Deal with it, Pitt.
What do you want? What is it that you want? Like, do you want a show? No, wait. What do you want?
Dancing with the Stars. You want to start over?
What is it? Well, like, ultimately, what is it that you want? Do you want to do film? Do you want a television show developed around you? Do you want? Is it stand? Like, what?
Okay.
Is it?
Well, besides a remake of The Love Connection, I also
we'll make that in two and two.
Two and two. Besides doing Let's Make a Deal the way it was intended.
Yeah. Costumes.
Okay, here's what I would never want to do is The Price is Right, what Drew Carey has to do every day. Because that, I would rather sell door-to-door again than to say, no, the Kraft macaroni is not 35 cents.
And if I told you that he only shoots that 2 days a week?
I mean, what does it pay, and what are the things, and where's my trailer? Let's do three a day. I'm into it. You know what? The price of the Kraft macaroni was not 35 cents!
It's
tell him what you win, Carol Merrill.
2 days a week, it's nine figures. It's something insane.
I have never made any money. So here, I just made a pie. I can't jinx this or knock on laminate.
That's plastic.
Plastic. But I made a pilot for an Andy Kindler vehicle. And so that would be good.
Oh.
People say I should do a podcast, but I don't want anything to cut into my guesting on podcasts. I'm going to make another comedy CD because I've been doing comedy for 28 years. Maybe I should have more than one item out there.
You only have one CD. You only have one CD.
One DVD. It's so exhausting.
How much new material do you turn over?
Once a year. No. You know what? Don't you guys feel like it goes through fits and starts? Which is the name of your second season. No, it's like, sometimes you go through, I don't know, like a 40, I want to say 45 minutes a year, about. But then I do a lot of stuff for just the speech. I do an hour of material just for that speech every year. It's not good. And some of that material I then put in my act.
It's funny to watch. Do you ever question yourself? Like, am I too deconstructionist, or do you?
Yeah, I do. But then hopefully I let go of a bit. But it takes me a long time. Like I just like sometimes I think I don't know. I've been working on this for 2 years, but I think it's good, you know. But then I have to let it go. If a joke's, and then late at night, all the kids. What is the? Have you told them to be deathly silent?
Yeah.
No. I think sometimes, if I always believe the greatest thing about stand-up, I think you guys would agree with me, although you have agreed with me about nothing so far, so what the hell am I even trying? Well, this isn't exactly a group therapy session. You were going to say something?
No.
You're just judging me silently.
No, we just don't want to interrupt. We just don't want to interrupt your share.
Right. What was I saying now,
I don't know what you were talking about.
What was
comic, the thing about comedy, stand-up.
I have ADD. Here's the thing. I have terrible ADD that I didn't know I had for 50 years. I just thought I was lazy and couldn't focus. And then I realized, hey, I have a situation going on. Every 8 seconds, my mind goes completely blank.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
What was I talking about? So it's kind of weird. So I literally don't remember what we're talking about. But sometimes it'll come back. But the thing is, it couldn't have been that interesting. Nobody in the entire audience knows what I was talking about. What? Oh, letting a bit go. Oh, the best thing about set. Thank you. And I know it was hard.
These Canadian audiences know how to focus. It's not that they're silent; they're just focusing.
Exactly. And when the statement was as mundane as I was making, it's hard to. So I give this guy a lot of credit.
Yeah.
No. The thing that's great about stand-up is that if you go by the reaction of one crowd, or you do, or you just say, I'm going to figure out what the crowd likes, then you're doomed to be a crowd pleaser, and I think it only can end up with a suicide or me committing suicide.
Or a sitcom.
Or a sitcom.
And millions of dollars.
Yes. I mean, yeah, hugely successful, but dead inside. But if you're using the audience as I'm trying it out, and if eventually I'll get it to work where the audience gets it, that's a good thing to do. And sometimes I just have to say, after literally 2 years sometimes, whatever it is I thought, I'm not conveying it in a way that's funny. Now, that's different from if the joke depends on four people each night getting it.
Yeah.
I don't care. Then that's good.
So what's an example of one bit that you were never able to make work?
I'm trying to think of this. I mean, there's stuff right now in my act that I can't seem to... I don't know. See, this is what I do with my memory, but there's a couple of things just...
Dogs and cats are different.
Examples, meow, wolf.
This is terrible, because it's like, I wish I could think of the one thing. It looks like everything's working like
Does
a charm.
Does that say night shift up
Does
there?
Does that say Y2K?
Oh, yeah, because the deal is it's... I was talking about how you can update... You know, if you just update your old bits, you update with the Y2K, you stick the Mayan calendar in there. Boom! New joke! New joke city!
Great flick.
Okay, here's one that people don't get, but I think this is a joke everyone should get. I'd like us all to pull together for it.
Okay.
And come up to that. Bring yourself to me.
Get ready to get it.
Get ready to get it. Okay, so I say, you know, a lot of times when I tour, I don't draw very well, but I'm an optimist. I like to look at the audience as half full. Hip crowd. Too hip a crowd. They get it. These people get it. But sometimes... And then I have to explain that if you're using the expression, the glass is half full, yes, that is optimistic.
Yep.
And therefore, you can use that expression. But if you're saying the audience is half full, that is not a good turnout. And therefore, by using an expression that in one context is appropriate and works, and fish out of water,
okay.
Sticking it somewhere else, comedy fool's gold.
Please do me a favor. Just try this. Start devoting pieces of your act to the joke that doesn't work, and then spend 5 minutes explaining to the audience why it should work, and I guarantee you it'll end up working.
That's my technique. But Robin Williams like that was in the moment. But I never did the fish out of water thing, and I wasn't so... I mean, I really delivered the explanation better.
You did.
Why am I looking over here? And it does. But the actual joke, I think, should get howls of laughter.
And it's... but it just gets
jokes,
howls.
Some jokes you go, you know what? Pretty clever. Why am I not okay with that?
What is it? I just want to see how your brain works a little bit.
Now, the other thing is, because I have a terrible memory, I don't like to pull out cards like we used to do in the alternative scene back in the 90s.
Oh, right.
So I keep it in my pocket, but my mind goes blank.
All I see is, what's Hitler Google alert?
Oh, I say, I'm so obsessed with Hitler, I have a Hitler Google alert. he has better delivery than me, Chris. That's what I always said. My problem was.
You wrote Nathan Yahoo, but you spelled Yahoo like Yahoo, the website.
Like he's a Yahoo.
Yeah.
Oh, this bit doesn't know. Okay, here's a bit that doesn't work that way. I say, sometimes people get this part. I say, did you know that it turns out that the people who supplied Kool-Aid to Jonestown, it turned out to be Hawaiian Punch? But then I've been trying to work out the whole thing of like the guy who comes up with Kool-Aid, and now I'm working it out more. Like he says, I got a surefire thing. How could this go wrong? Sugar water.
Did anyone ever do a sketch where Jim Jones is like, all right, it's time to make the sacrament, the ultimate sacrifice, and then the Kool-Aid man just bursts through the wall and goes, oh, yeah,
That's where they should have gone. They should have gone. They should have gone self-deprecating with it.
Yeah, and then he just has everybody dive into his body,
and they just start. They're just kind of floating in there.
Congratulations, you just wrote a Family Guy cutaway.
Oh.
Yeah, that reminds me of the time the Kool-Aid guy went to Jonestown.
It's like that one time.
What are you saying with the ding over there? How about this voice? Here's the thing I can't watch for 2 seconds. South Park comes on. Who's that guy? What does he sound like?
It's Cartman.
Eric Cartman.
And it's really funny.
It's pretty
funny.
Do your Cartman.
I don't know.
Come on. You guys are...
I don't have one.
South Park here. South Park here. It's better animation and terrible voices.
But it's pretty great, though.
You realize when you're doing that voice, that sounds like Cartman, people are laughing.
South Park, South Park, South Park. Hey, Alan. That's not him. What am I, Ed Wynn?
Did you just say hi, Sal?
What am I, Ed Wynn?
Hey, fellas. Hey, 23 Skidoo.
I think we have time in the show for 3 Quements. So if there are 3 Quements, I'll run out there with a microphone. You could ask him really
if there
fast.
Aren't, we'll just go back to the hotel.
There's a gentleman with a UCB shirt up there.
All right, here I come.
Chris, be careful. Oh, Gravy Boat made
Hello.
It.
Hello.
Hi. I was at your show yesterday.
We remember.
Okay. I was just going to ask you guys if Matt Meyer eventually becomes a host of Attack of the Show, what's going to happen to the podcast?
We'll record around my schedule.
What do you think?
Like,
you think
we kind of already do.
I mean, he already works on Attack of the Show, and we still are able to make it work. Are you afraid that he's going to go, like, mad with power and be like, I have not time for podcasts.
I park on P1 now.
Local ref.
Well, just because it's a very local show and a daily one show, building. Be a lot busier.
No, he wouldn't actually be busier at all. He was a gadget producer on Attack of the Show, so he was actually working a lot. How dare you not know the behind-the-scenes inner workings of...
Since I produced the show, I would actually become less
Produce a
busy.
Segment on the show.
Well, not just that. I mean, I pitch in.
He's super busy.
I don't just sit around all day.
I mean,
yeah,
if you notice,
you tell me that all the time.
Sometimes.
I spent this whole week doing nothing but sitting around. You've literally said those words to me.
Oh snap.
Sometimes,
here's the deal.
I think you
sometimes,
said it today.
Sometimes,
oh, no, he did not.
Sometimes Gadgetron floats.
I just let
them
go.
And then I have them all written. And then I'm like, what am I doing?
That was a very nerdy question you asked, sir.
Yeah, I think it would be absolutely fine. I hope Matt hosts Attack of the Show.
Is that a UCB
any
shirt?
Other, oh. Any other? Two more questions or comments that are questions.
Where's one
that are comments
over there?
That are comments. This gentleman here.
Andy, I love your act so much, and you're so handsome. Well, thank you.
It's not really a question.
My question is, why are you so self-destructive?
Self-sabotage.
What is your
It's a quick one, I guess, for all 4. Why do you guys think Brian Regan isn't rated among the top?
Like, he is.
Yeah, he is.
I think he
There's
is.
There's nobody funny.
Not with a lot of the...
You're just saying, why isn't he more famous? But that's kind of what you're saying.
Okay.
But
he's one of the top grossing.
He is actually, like, well, at least in America he is anyway. He can still tour, like, giant venues. He's an interesting case of someone who built his career... not relying on television at all. He just toured so much.
Your question should have been, why don't my hipster comedy nerd friends like Brian Regan?
Yeah.
Brian Regan, like if you watch Brian Regan's set, I can see so many comics that so much of this scene loves. Traces of stuff that they were inspired by just in his act and his presentation. Yeah, he's still... I haven't seen him perform anytime recently. Have you seen him at all?
I have. But you know the other thing I want to say was... No, I don't think... I heard him on... I've heard him being... he was interviewed on WTF. Not to say another podcast. But the thing is... I also want to say, though, I think we all agree that you're not always in control of where your career goes. I mean, he was talking about on WTF that he's had, like, sitcom opportunities, but he's not like a guy you can stick in. Like, so many people aren't a guy you can stick in a box. I feel like anything that came along. He's starting to do like voices now, but he has such a satisfying career as a stand-up. He loves stand-up, has a huge following, gets to go on Letterman. So I think he has such a great life that anything that would happen to him would happen to him, but it doesn't make what he's doing now any, you know, less
when,
great.
When do you start to hate him?
No, but that's a theory that I'm. Interestingly enough, I don't have rage and envy against everybody.
Oh,
right. I think there was one more. Is there
behind you, Chris? Behind you?
What? Stop! Where?
It looks like there's another podcast going on the other side of the room.
Oh, it is. Yes, sir.
For Andy, what or who inspires you in comedy?
Andy.
I don't like that. No, I love like Paul F. Tompkins. I loved and still love Mitch Hedberg. Mitch Hedberg was a huge influence. Really got was lucky. Now it's like I'm on a telethon. Was lucky enough to work with a Mr. Bill Hicks. Oh, I love wow. Bill Hicks. And I grew up loving Letterman, but I also grew up. And there's so much. The thing, and I want to say is, I know it's going to sound like not like to get applause or everything. I really feel like now is the most exciting time I've ever seen for stand-up comedy and comedy of all types, because there's none of that 90s like where everyone was doing homogenized stuff, and there's so many different styles and so many great comics right now. That's how I feel. Tig, I love Tig Notaro.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
I like Todd Barry.
I had such an insane moment where I, you know, Tig had cancer, and
right.
So she went on Conan, and made it funny. Like she sat and talked honestly on a sitcom. I mean, on a talk show couch, which you don't really ever see happen. And she talked about being sick, and she talked about everything that happened to her, and made the audience laugh. But honestly, when she said. And he said, "So are you okay?" And she said, "Yes." It turns out I'm okay. It didn't spread. I have like such a, like I almost started crying. I was so relieved that, and I had to email her. I'm like, "I'm so glad you're okay."
She's a transformative comedian. I really do believe that she and that she was always funny, but in the last few years, she's like taken off in a way that is just, you can't even compare her to anybody in a way. And I just think she's so brilliant. And just like even the set she did on Conan, where she turned around and
did push the stool.
That's just amazing.
She's really amazing. The one thing that I admire about her as a comic that I guess I'm just still not comfortable with is that she's so good like using moments of like she takes her time and then
yeah,
she'll
pause.
Yeah,
that's really admirable.
Where most comics, like me included, would feel like I have to fill every second with words or talking or noise. She'll just say something and then just let it breathe for a second.
And she's this. And the other thing that I love about her, and also about my favorite comics, is she's exactly the same way off stage as she is on stage. Yeah. If you go to a party with her, she will just give it. Like she gives it to me so hard. Like she insults me so hard.
What kind of parties are these?
Unbelievable and just nonstop. The sarcasm just never ends, and it's just and so and that she's transferred that onto stage is incredible.
We've had a good time here at the Nerdist Podcast. Thank you for coming to the Virgin Mobile Mod Room here at JFL 42. This has been a really fun festival for us. Thank you if you came to both shows last night and tonight. Please, a huge hand for Andy Kindler, our guest.
Thank you.
Also, the sister wives, Matt Myra and Jonah Ray. Thank you so much, Toronto. We love performing here. It's so much fun to be back. Enjoy your burrito, everyone!
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
Every year, 50 teenage girls, one from every state, show up in Mobile, Alabama to compete in the largest cash scholarship competition exclusively for high school girls. They spend months training to win the big prize. But what happens when a Supreme Court decision leaves many of them feeling unprepared for the real world?
A lot of the girls were crying, and I never seen any of them cry before.
From Pineapple Street Studios and Wondery, this is The Competition. I'm your host, Shima Oliai. Follow me behind the scenes as all 50 girls are catapulted into the center of a nationwide debate about their rights. What do they think of their changing country? Follow The Competition on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of The Competition early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.